I'm just going to start that thing just going so that it's better just to leave it running.
Mm-hmm.
Just to say, this is Alistair Greenhill sitting with John Wisbeach at Burwell Museum on the 23rd of September 2013. That way I know what the recording is at the beginning. What I was kind of thinking was, you told me you were an architect.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to have a little. It would be interesting to have a little bit about yourself, right? And how and what being an architect and how you came and your memories, if you like, of Burwell. A little bit about that, and then moving on to how you became involved with the mill and then the museum. And I believe you were, you know, once we get beyond the stuff about the actual mill itself, you were involved with the barn and things like that.
Well, yeah.
And stuff like that. So perhaps if we can, we'll just start and we'll just talk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, you know, we can edit this afterwards.
Of course, yeah.
So if you start saying something and you think,
oh, yeah,
that's not really what I wanted to say.
Say, yeah, oh, that's
then
not right, yeah.
Feel free just to say,
yeah,
no, I think I'll start telling you about that again.
Yeah, or we can sort of, you know, presumably there'll be some sort of playback or the recording that I could perhaps hear, and then it could be, you know, maybe sort of thought through a bit more. I don't know. Because thoughts vary, don't they? You can't always get them in order, can you?
Yes.
You know, you know, you can talk about, I mean, I'm not very good on dates, you know, actual year dates and things like remembering people's birthdays and that sort of thing. But, you know, okay, well, you know, what would you like me to start with?
Well, if you could just, let's just start. If you could maybe just start by telling us your full name and where and when you were born.
Oh, okay, right. My name's John Keith Wisby. I was born in Cambridge on 18th of February 1938. In as far as I can recall, the old maternity hospital, which was on Mill Road. My parents were Kathleen and Walter Wisby. We lived in 214 Cromwell Road, Cambridge, which was part of the Romsey Town complex at the time. And that was where I spent my childhood and grew up and went to school in that area from infant school to junior school to secondary school. So, is that?
Yeah, that's
okay.
And when did you first become connected with the Burwell area?
I came to Burwell to live permanently in 1965. I was at that time working for an architectural practice in Swaffham Bulbeck. Guy's name was Cecil John Bourne. And I was living in Cambridge in rented accommodation with my then wife. And we were looking for a property in the countryside. And we'd visited lots and lots of villages, couldn't get a cottage, couldn't get a mortgage, because in those days, old properties were not favourable to building societies. You had to have either a lot of money or a big deposit or somebody in the know. But eventually I found a cottage in Burwell called Millfield Cottage, which was derelict. And it belonged to a small contractor at the time who I knew indirectly, who I did a little bit of private drawing work for. And I approached him and asked him if he'd be interested in selling it. And we agreed on a deal. And I bought it in 1964 in a derelict state, no electricity, no water, no sewage, just a shell. It had been empty for about 5 years. And subsequently worked on it from mid-64 through to the middle of 65 with my father, who was in the building industry. And we renovated the cottage to a standard whereas we could move in. We put water in, we put sewage in, electricity. We got a couple of rooms that were habitable. We cleared the garden to a certain extent because it was all overgrown and subsequently moved in. And I lived in that property until approximately 2 years ago. My wife, Elizabeth, she died nearly 5 years ago, and after her death, I lived in the cottage on my own for a while, and then I subsequently sold it, and still now live in the village, but in a different house with a different person. Says.
That's great. Just interested to know, you bought an almost derelict cottage, and was that unusual at that time to
Yes,
be doing that?
it was quite unusual to buy a property that, firstly, you couldn't get a mortgage on it. Secondly, building societies were very fearful of things traditionally built, because the cottage was built of clunch, which is a semi-hard chalk, which was mined in the Burwell area from sort of Roman times. But the man I was working with, this guy Cecil Bourne, the architect, he had also lived in an old he lived in an old cottage, and we worked in the back of the cottage, and he knew the difficulties, and he had a sympathetic building society friend who we went to see, and I subsequently got a mortgage through a company that was then called the Cooperative Building Society, which was part of the Co-op empire, but then was subsequently taken over. And that's how we were able to purchase the cottage. And as I say, I lived in it for over 40 odd years. Our son Jonathan, he was born in the house, or he was brought up in the house. He born in 1971, and he spent all his childhood and teenage years there before going off to college. And he, loved the place as well as we did, but. After the death of my wife, I felt that I needed to move on and find somewhere else afresh, particularly with a new partner, a lady I'd known for a long, long while, who was originally married to a very old friend who'd subsequently died. She was on her own, and I was on my own, and we decided to pool our resources and sell our respective houses and buy a house in Burwell. Which we've subsequently done, but it's not an old house, it's a fairly newish, but nearly 20 years old, but it was in a very poor condition, and we subsequently have done that up, and we now live there together.
I understand your working life was as an architect.
That's correct, yeah.
And
Not initially. I started my career because I was one of the sort of people who never made the grammar school grade. So I went to secondary school, but subsequently went to technical college, as then Cambridge Technical College, which is now Anglia Ruskin University, and studied there. But I initially started my career as a carpenter, but I was always interested in architecture. But at the time, I couldn't get a job as a trainee or anything like that. Probably, I don't know why. But subsequently, I did a full trade apprenticeship in the building industry. And then I left and got a position in Cambridge as a trainee with the East Anglian Regional Hospital Board Architects Department. And I worked there for a couple of years, and then subsequently got called up for national service. I was in the Royal Signals for 2 years. I was a cryptographer, and I was posted to Paris to what was then Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe, SHAPE, which was very interesting and a nice place to be for a young man. I came out of the army, and I got a job in Cambridge with a small contractor doing drawing work. Subsequently, went to another firm, got another job, and then I had a very dear friend whose name was Aitken Clark. He was Scottish, and he was working for Cecil Bourne in Swaffham Bourbeck at the time, and they needed somebody else, and I got a position there, and the three of us worked together in a small practice. I worked for Cecil for a few years and subsequently left and went to work for a couple of different firms in Cambridge, just to sort of broaden my career base. And then I'd heard that Cecil Bourne, his assistants were both leaving, both going to work in America. And subsequently, I talked to him because I'd kept friendship with him, and I got a job there. And I worked there for the rest of my working career with him and became an associate with the firm. But subsequently, he decided to bring in a new partner who the then associates of the firm, myself and a guy called Chris Brook, we couldn't get on with. So we both subsequently left. Chris went off to work for a Newmarket firm, and I started my own practice in Burwell. And at the same time, working part time as Assistant Conservation Officer at Cambridge City Council because I didn't have enough work initially to live on, so I had to do something else as well. But gradually, the practice built up, and I developed it into a very sort of worthwhile thing, specialising in renovation and work on historic buildings, and got one or two awards. I did. Renovated the Eagle Pub in Cambridge, I don't know whether you know of it, which got a Civic Trust Award, and have been responsible for lots of conversions and things in the village, barns and outbuildings, and rebuilding cottages that were completely derelict, and subsequently got involved with Burwell Museum and responsible for all the buildings on the site here.
So it was the Eagle Pub, that's where Crick and Watson
Yeah, that's right.
and the
Yeah.
had the RAF ceiling and
Yeah.
everything. Was that if you like, your proudest project, or what do you think what do you think's been the
It
project you
was
like to be remembered by?
one of the best jobs I've been involved in because of its historical background. But I think I also have worked for a firm in the village, Mitchams. They're a big agricultural machinist people and farm owners. For nearly 20 years, and Mr. Mitchum bought an estate at Fordham House Estate, which was a site that was full of Grade 2 listed buildings, barns, houses, outbuildings, sheds. And we subsequently, over the many years, restored these buildings. The barn, particularly, was a very large timber frame barn that was in the process of falling to pieces. And we completely rebuilt it using the old materials again, and it was converted into offices, and then other buildings on the site were converted into offices. And subsequently, a few years ago, we built three new office blocks there, a two-story building and two single-story buildings, looking very much like traditional farm buildings to blend in with what was there. So I think that was probably one of the interesting jobs, but I've also done two buildings that I shall never ever forget. Particularly one. One was a cottage in Over. It was another listed building. Again, it was a brick building with a thatch roof. It had been a timber frame building, but it had been encased in brick over its years, and it subsequently caught fire and was burnt to the ground, apart from two walls, a front wall and an end wall, and the chimney breast. But fortunately, South Cambridgeshire District Council, with which it was in, had some photographs of the original building, and I designed an extension to go on it as well, and it was completely rebuilt in the sort of form that it was before it was burnt down. So I think that again was a sort of highlight of a career, to see a building that was literally nothing reconstructed to something that ended up really very nice and part of the village scene again. So yeah, there's been quite a few. I could reel them off for ages, I suppose, but that's not really what you're after, I don't think.
Just one follow-up question. Being an architect specialising in historical buildings, have you had to do a lot of research?
Some, but not too much. No, not a great deal. I think the research has been out of interest, really, to find sort of dates for things. And I mean, there's an awful lot of information you can glean, particularly at my area that I worked in was East Cambridgeshire, basically. And English Heritage had already produced a very big tome of information about all the villages in East Cambridgeshire, listing all the listed buildings, and there was a lot of information relating to individual houses and barns and things in that book, which you could get information from if you wanted to. So, there wasn't an awful lot of research needed, to be honest.
Okay. Before I forget, I did get you a glass of
Yeah,
water in case you
thank you.
wanted it. So perhaps we can move forward. What's your earliest recollections of the Burwell Mill?
The mill, I don't have great recollections of obviously seeing it when I lived in the village, because the area it stood in was just fields before the houses were built. And there was a guy in the village at the time, a man called John Hardiman, who was a heating engineer. He had a firm in the village, and he had a great interest in historic buildings as well. And I think he subsequently found out that the land on which the mill stood was going to be subject to development. And he had known the contractors who were going to do it, who were local builders called Fuller and Blackwell, for many years through his heating association. And he said he was also did work for us in our practice, Cecil Bourne and myself from Baalbek. And we were talking about it one day, and we said, you know, really need to do something about the mill because they can't take it down because it's listed. They don't want it because it's no use to them. How about trying to preserve it? So I think initially John approached Fuller and Blackwell, and then we had various meetings with them and talked it through. And they said, yeah, we want to get rid of it. You know, if you want it, you can have it. So we decided that if we formed a trust, we could then or then have the opportunity to get grants for restoring the building. So that a deal was done, and the mill was purchased for £5 as a nominal figure. And from then, Burwell Museum Trust was subsequently formed, and the three trustees initially were Cecil Bourne, John Hardiman, and John Wisby. Others joined at a later date, but that was my initial association with the windmill. And over the years, we've got other people involved to work on it. There was money made available through English Heritage, and East Cambridgeshire gave small grants towards it. And it was subsequently restored to a working mill again.
So,
So,
can you recall what the windmill was like on the day that your trust purchased it?
oh, it wasn't working. It looked very sad. A lot of the render was missing. It was the sails were sort of at different angles. It was just in a very, very sad state. I think I'm given to understand it was last used in about 1953, 54, before we got it, which was, I can't recall exactly, but that information about dates is in the file somewhere. But it must have been in the early 70s, I suspect, that we got initially involved with the project.
And what were the insides like? Was there much left?
Yeah, the inside of the building was complete, but that was one of the nice things about it, that all the working mechanism was there. Nobody had gutted it. I understand that the mill had been used, but it had been worked instead of the sails turning, the stones that grind the grain were operated via a traction engine that was parked outside with a belt drive through the wall, which then drove the stones without operating the whole of the mill itself. But yeah, all the machinery was there. The things like windows were rotten, doors were rotten, and some of the floors were not very good either. And we subsequently found that a lot of the main structural beams that support the machinery in the mill itself, the ends of them were all rotten, and they were subsequently, it was all jacked up. They were subsequently cut back, and we metal shoed them, put metal plates into them, and then built them in the wall so they're all secure again. And that was virtually all that work was done by volunteers initially. And there was a group of young people in the village. They were doing the Duke of Edinburgh Award. And they, as part of their commitment to that, they decided that they would like to help at the windmill. So on a Sunday morning, a group of these boys with us in attendance would come and they would help to renovate the mill, do things like, you know, humping and moving and anything we wanted them to do. They were sort of teenagers, and that was a great help. And it helped them and gave them an interest, and hopefully someone went on to be interested in buildings later on. I don't know. I think one of them went on to become a pilot in the Red Arrows. So whether that was any good or not, I don't know. Is that...
that's fantastic. So the you... you repaired the basic structure, the floors, the beams and everything first.
We did.
What happened to the equipment that was in there? Did that have to be taken out? And
some of the we then employed a professional millwright, a guy called Chris Wilson, who lives at Over and owns Over Mill, and he came and he was in a supervisory capacity to take the sails down and a lot of the machinery associated with that, and he subsequently then rebuilt the cap. The cap was covered in aluminium then. It's not anymore, but it was covered in aluminium, and that lasted until this year when the cap was taken off again and lowered to the ground. The aluminium was taken off, the cap frame was repaired, and a new cap roof was put on of double layer cedar boarding. And I understand, I haven't seen, but they're constructing two new sets of sails as well to put up, so when the mill is finished it will look as it was many, many years ago. It subsequently had new windows, it's been re-tarred outside, the rendering's been repaired, and overall it'll be hopefully a working windmill again.
Mm-hmm. So you were a trustee and a volunteer for a good many years. How many people do you think have been involved in various forms of volunteering? You talked about the Duke of Edinburgh.
I don't know. I don't know how many boys there were. Because it went over quite a long time. I think we've got some photographs somewhere of these boys working in the mill, but I don't recall how many. I mean, there was only perhaps four or five at a time. And some of them continued, others packed up and other ones came, but there was a little nucleus of lads who used to come and help, but I can't remember how. And subsequently the trust got larger. There was Cecil's son Dick Bourne joined, Paul Hawes joined, who's now chairman of Burwell Museum. Another chap, Chris Brook, was involved. Chris was the guy who worked with me at Cecil's, and he subsequently measured the windmill initially, and he prepared a magnificent set of drawings, working drawings of the mill, which there are copies somewhere around. I honestly can't remember all the names.
I'm not looking for the names, but I was... So there was like a core group in the trust,
there
and
was
then
a
there,
core
was the,
group,
there was the boys.
Yes, right. A group
I just wondered
volunteers.
If there was anyone else involved.
No, not really. No. It was quite a small group, because at one time before the museum commenced, we used to open the windmill on a Sunday, and one of us would be there in the afternoon or during the week for people to come and visit before it was involved with the museum at all. But then it got a problem, it wouldn't operate, and it was eventually sort of shut down for safety's sake.
All right, it's a pity. So how did the transition to the... I guess the museum wasn't here to start with.
No, it wasn't. No. The mill obviously was a trust in its own right. It was Burwell Windmill Trust, which was operated as a completely independent trust. And then... members of that trust, particularly Paul Hawes and myself, there was a thought many years ago about having a bygones weekend in the village, and this sort of got going, and there was a bygones exhibition in the village hall. A lot of the stuff came from Paul Hawes. He'd run a skip business, but he'd been interested in recycling and sort of artifacts and all sorts of things all his life. And there was one or two other people in the village had stuff, and they brought to the village hall, and this Bygones Weekend was successful, and an idea was then mooted, well, maybe we could have a village museum. And that's how it all initially started. We had no site, no buildings, no thoughts, but a group of like-minded people got together and formed Burwell Museum Trust, which was a separate entity to Burwell Windmill Trust. And, you know, it's gone from strength to strength. I mean, that's a whole new story, the museum.
You were a very active part of that as well.
Yeah, I was a founder member with Paul. I was chairman for 12 years because the initial sort of 10 years of the trust was spent raising money to eventually have a building on the site. We subsequently got offer from the parish council of the land, and that was on a peppercorn rent. And a barn was found at a village called Streatley End, and we approached the owner of the barn and asked him if he'd be interested in selling it, and he did agree. It wasn't listed and he wasn't using it. It was on an isolated farmstead and it was getting vandalised. And we subsequently, Chris Brook and I, my colleague, we went and measured the barn and made a set of working drawings of it, and all the timbers in the barn were all numbered up, so we had a sort of code because it's like a big jigsaw puzzle. And we subsequently took it down ourselves, and it was then stored for many years while we raised money to enable it to be rebuilt on the site. I think it was about 10 years, and we raised, I think it was over £40,000 in that time to enable. And then I made a planning application on behalf of the trust to re-erect the barn on the site as a village museum, and that's now where it stands. And that was the beginning of what you now see as Burwell Museum. And I don't think at the time anybody could envisage that what we've got now is what we started with. And whether we'd have gone through with it or not, I don't know. You know, it's brought a lot of joy, but it's brought a lot of headaches as well.
So that the barn was the only building on the site?
The barn was the only building on the site when the museum opened 20 years ago. That's a plaque out there. I'm not good on dates. Yeah, that was the only building. But then we had a small amount of grant aid on that project, some from East Cambridgeshire District Council, some from Forest Heath District Council at the time. But they weren't enormous amounts. But the thing was so successful, there was a lot of interest, and we had this quite large site, and it was decided maybe we could have a slightly bigger museum. And subsequently the planning authority were approached, and they were sympathetic. East Cambridgeshire Council were sympathetic. They had suddenly quite a lot of money available as grant aid. The long building along the side here with the open cart sheds, that I designed that, and that was built with grant money. I think it was 95% or 90% grant aid from East Cambridgeshire District Council. And the council were very good. They encouraged the museum to develop, obviously with financial aid. And then subsequent buildings were put up over the years, the toilets, the smithy, other things. And a few years ago, the last one built was the vehicle shed, which was funded by the Gibson estate in Exning. Mr. Simon Gibson, who's been a big benefactor of the museum and the windmill initially, through his charitable trust, paid for the cars and vehicles building at the back, and that's the last building that's been built on the site. I can't tell you all the dates, I'm sorry, you know, where when all the buildings were built. It's a long while.
No, I mean,
these are all recycled buildings. This what we're in now. These buildings here were farm buildings at Reach on a little council farm, and they wanted to take it down because they had planning permission to build on the site. We approached them and said, could we have the buildings? They said, yeah, you can have them if you take them down. So they were subsequently taken down and stored away. We then applied to Wren at the time for grant aid, and we got enough money to employ a contractor to put them up again for us. So they formed the meeting room and Dennis room and the offices and sort of thing. So there's been a lot of recycling on this site, an awful lot, you know. The main barn, these outbuildings with the offices, the smithy, all the Nissen huts, the Roman pottery, they've all been brought from other sites and rebuilt by the trustees or with voluntary help on museum site to create the museum that you see now.
You said that you designed the brick building,
yeah,
with the sheds.
Yeah,
is that based on any local architecture or something?
It was felt that the museum should perhaps develop a bit like a traditional farmyard, with the centre core, the big thrashing barn that was there already, and the periphery with a group of smaller buildings. And on traditional farms, you would often found open cart sheds, which we did, and two-storey buildings, which could have been granaries and all sorts of things. So that was the basis of the design, was to sort of emulate traditional farm buildings in this part of East Anglia. They've been subsequently adapted for museum use, and they use traditional local materials, clunch, brick, pan tiles and timber cladding as materials.
Yeah, they're very nice.
Yeah.
Very effective. You've obviously worked with many people over the years. Can you tell us about some of the characters you worked with, or some of the... There must have been fun times. No.
What you mean? Sorry, you haven't got this switched on at the moment. Sorry, I'm not really with you.
Well, I just wonder if you have any recollections of times when you've had a good laugh while working on the buildings, or times that you particularly remember fondly of working on the museum or the windmill.
I'd have to trawl back through to think about that, I think, to be honest. Nothing sort of jumps out, at the moment. I can't recall specific items. I mean, there's been an awful lot probably over the years, but, I suppose completions of things and seeing things recreated from nothing, like the barn on the museum, when it was just a frame, and then seeing an eventual building, seeing my designs from paper drawings to completed projects. That's the big satisfaction. But, obviously there have been an awful lot of people over the years and probably an awful lot of characters, but, I'd really have to sit down and think about that, I'm afraid. You know, I can't remember it all. It's a long while, and so many different people. I think the thing is, though, there was a lot of, in the 60s and 70s, there was still a lot of traditional small contractors who were not monetary orientated as today's contractors. You shook hands on something, that was a deal. But most of that's gone out of the window now, so I think the trust has gone. Not completely, but an awful lot of trust has gone out of the working environment. I mean, I don't know whether you ever found it, but I'm sure it's true with lots of things.
So many of the, what you're saying is many of the volunteers it was their job, and they were giving up some of their own time.
Well, all volunteers give up time, don't they?
They were applying their skills as tradesmen.
Yeah, some of them. I mean, the volunteers, the trustees now, I mean, Peter Arns, he's a trained carpenter. His brother is an engineer. I have my own architectural skills and I'm pretty competent with construction skills as well. Paul Hawes, the chairman, he has an awful lot of expertise in different things. So, yeah, I think, you know, they use things that, and also the group itself was very adaptable to doing things, you know, problem solving over the years. So, yeah, they were a good group of people. There was some people who, there was a guy called Mike Pike, he was a trustee. He was very good with media. He, all the television crews that came here and radio interviews and all the publicity, he used to do all that, which was another facet. You know, people tend to forget it's not all about building and doing things. There's other bits that, and we've had one or two people who are good with finance and that sort of thing. So, it's been a good mixed bag over the years. But most of those people have now retired, as we all should, I think.
So you're very much in the middle of the restoration project on the windmill itself.
Yeah.
I believe that's due to be completed in the middle of 2014.
I think so, yeah. I'm not involved in that very much, to be honest. I've taken a back seat, as I say. I resigned as a trustee last year through various reasons, but still I'm associated with the museum. I work up here Monday mornings, generally decorating, but any other jobs that come along, and Tuesday evenings, and have done for, well, the Monday has been since January of this year, and Peter and Arms and I virtually redecorated an awful lot of the museum to get it up to speed again.
And do you think it's going to be a big, is there going to be dramatic changes with the completion of the restoration? Is this... the end of your vision, or the ultimate aim in your...
I think if you turn it off now, because I've got thoughts that are my thoughts.
Right.
That are nothing to do with, you know...
Okay, John, thank you very much for talking about the museum.